Hey, it's Jill Schlesinger, CBS News business analyst and certified financial planner. You may have heard me dispensing financial advice on the radio before, but did you know you can get my money tips on demand with my podcast, Money Watch with Jill Schlesinger? If you have a question about a major financial decision in your life, this is the show for you. Follow and listen to Money Watch with Jill Schlesinger on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Wiggins America.
I am not a number. I am a free man.
Wiggins America.
The only thing I'm going to need from you guys right now is a cup of coffee.
Wiggins.
Today's global economy waits for no man.
America.
Today's global business climate is like, whatever, dude. Hey!
Politics is a dirty game. I'm not sure we want to play.
There are forces here at work that you couldn't possibly understand. You have no idea how high up this goes.
Welcome to Wiggins America.
Absolutely. She can win. This is going to be a great test of the power of the media. To take someone who formerly was universally disliked and transform them into a godlike figure. And they will use everything that they have to try to do that. The question is, are the American people smart enough to see through it? And I actually think the American people are smarter than anybody gives them credit for.
Really like that quote from Ben Carson, Dr. Ben Carson, talking to Tucker Carlson, to try to get that out, about how this is a test of the power of the media. Because we've really been moving in a direction where the media has been so decentralized, or at least more decentralized than it ever has, that the power of the mainstream legacy, or whatever you want to call it, traditional media, has diminished. And all these big names, New York Times, CNN, you know, Washington Post, these names, they still matter. That's why they're the mainstream. They kind of drive the acceptable narrative. But people don't really look to them for their source on everything anymore. This is Wiggins America. Thanks for being here. Old Roy will be in just a minute. We're going to talk about a few different issues. But that test that's about to happen of the power of the media is a very, very important one. I don't think that we are going to be disappointed. I think we're going to see that the power of, because it's not just the media, it's the power of the message, the narrative that's being painted and given to you about this candidate that nobody liked three or four months ago, including the media themselves and the people who are painting her with this very nice paintbrush now. They didn't really like her, but now she's the only hope they have for continuing their agenda. And so they have pulled out all the stops. The nice thing is that if my prediction is correct and Ben Carson's prediction is correct, that Trump still does win this election, that's really kind of the death blow for this form of media. They're on their last legs. They've cashed in all their integrity to get rid of Trump. And in any way possible, they have done it over and over and over again. And if Trump still beats them, then we're going to be in a new place in America where the media has lost its all of its reliability. It's already there. You know, according to polls, it's like 15% of Americans trust the media. So I think that's actually a win for where we're at right now. But I want to play some sound for you because of I would say this is underreported news. She's a name, Tulsi Gabbard. She's a name in politics. I don't know that she's a name outside of those who know politics, though. And my focus group is the couple people in my life that I will occasionally mention things to see if they know about them. And I will say my wife didn't even know who Tulsi Gabbard was until I kind of pointed her out. Oh, yeah, okay, that's who she is. You know, she's not a big enough figure that she's probably moving the needle enough. But she did step out of the Democrat Party. Here's the weird thing. She won more delegates, more Democrat delegates in 2020 than Kamala Harris did. Kamala Harris is, of course, now the Democrat nominee, and Tulsi Gabbard is endorsing Donald Trump.
And we can't live free as long as we have a government that is retaliating against its political opponents and undermining our civil liberties, weaponizing our very institutions against those they deem as a threat. Kamala Harris has done this over the last 3.5 years. She won't hesitate to continue that if she is elected as president. President Trump has been their first and foremost target in this because they don't want us as voters to even have the option to vote for him. I've been their most recent target, added to a secret domestic terror watch list after exposing the truth about what kind of dangers we would face if Kamala Harris is elected as president. We as Americans must stand together to reject this anti-freedom culture of political retaliation and abuse of power. We can't allow our country to be destroyed by politicians who will put their own power ahead of the interests of the American people, our freedom, and our future.
That's how she started the speech. This is how she ended it.
I am proud to stand here before you today, whether you're a Democrat, a Republican, or an independent. If you love our country, as I do, if you cherish peace and freedom, as we do, I invite you to join me in doing all that we can to save our country and elect President Donald J. Trump and send him back to the White House to do the tough work of saving our country and serving the people. Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Mr. President.
Okay, it wasn't long, but she is now a part of the Trump transition team, transitioning into holding the White House, is what that means. RFK Jr. is too, and it makes you ask some pretty big questions when these people are endorsing Donald Trump. Because Donald Trump is, because of the caricature of that's been painted of him, partially, and he partially is a caricature. But because every possible thing that you could use against him, they have. They will use it if it exists. And they'll even make stuff up if it's kind of around it. They'll just make it up, you know. Suckers and losers, he said it. And he, of course he didn't. That we know of, anyway. One anonymous source versus 40 who were there. I digress. These people are Democrats. I mean, these are, you go back not 20 years. You go back 2 years, 3 years, and these people are Democrats, and they're now supporting Donald Trump, and they're high-profile Democrats, because you'll always find some random, you know, at the DNC, there were a couple of rando Republicans that the only reason they became high-profile is because they criticized Donald Trump, like Adam Kinzinger, but then there were a few others, too. Tulsi Gabbard, you know, had a semi-successful run for the Democrat nomination in 2020, ultimately didn't win. She wasn't going to, but she raised her profile as a Democrat. RFK Jr., obviously the dude has been a Democrat his entire life. I would say he probably still thinks he is. He just doesn't like where the party's at. So he's endorsing Donald Trump. Well, what's the commonality here? They both are doing it because of corruption. So there's this big political realignment happening that's against the power structure that exists right now. And if you're not a part of that power structure, or you see problems with it, or you want to criticize it at all, you are kicked out of that power structure, even if you align with them on most of their priorities policy-wise. So there's this strange realignment happening that a lot of people are criticizing because they're saying, well, Republicans need to stick to their conservative values. You can't bring people in who don't have conservative values. Well, what is conservatism then? Conservatism at its core, and here's a weird thing. I've been reading a lot of old Republican platforms, you know, 100 years ago, even further back than that, just to see, just because I've been curious. And they're actually pretty consistent with now. Now, they'll be based on the move of the day. I was reading the 1912 Republican platform trying to elect Taft again. I think it was his second term. And it was some of the things they're talking about are finishing the Panama Canal and stuff. You know, like that's issues of the day. But the key stuff is actually pretty similar. And it all boils down to this point: limited government, more personal responsibility, and then more personal freedom as an extension of that. We've gotten to a place now where we can't actually govern ourselves, or at least a lot of the country can't. I view that as a spiritual problem. I view that very much as if you are not able to govern yourself, it's because you have no discipline. And the only way I know personally that I've been able to have any discipline is by following Jesus Christ. If I didn't have him in my life, I would be all over the place. So to me, this is very much a spiritual problem. And I think the founders understood this too. That's why they based all of their core tenets and beliefs on rights given to us by our Creator. They knew that there had to be this sort of overseer over you so that you could personally handle the responsibility of freedom. That's where we're aligning now with some of these people who are still, in my opinion, Democrats. They may not be calling themselves Democrats anymore, but policy-wise, they're Democrats. We're aligning with them because they're seeing that out-of-control power is limiting personal freedoms. And Republicans are all about limiting government, small government, and that is an extension into everything. That means less taxes. You know, that means more personal freedoms to own businesses. That means less restrictions on everything, including social issues. It means protecting those who can't be protected. So you get back to kind of the role of government. But ultimately, it's the smallest government you can have while still utilizing the necessary functions of having a government. So it's not anarchy, but it is small government. I think that's where we're aligning with people like Tulsi Gabbard and RFK Jr., who may not even be all for small government, but they're definitely against big, powerful, corrupt government. And they're seeing it, and they're saying, I can't be a part of this. Old Roy is going to come in and we're going to talk.
Hey, it's Jill Schlesinger, CBS News business analyst and certified financial planner. You may have heard me dispensing financial advice on the radio before, but did you know you can get my money tips on demand with my podcast, Money Watch with Jill Schlesinger? If you have a question about a major financial decision in your life, this is the show for you. Follow and listen to Money Watch with Jill Schlesinger on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Talk about the issues of the day. We're definitely going to get to the Kamala interview at the end of this hour. This is Wiggins America. Stick around.
You can call us Americans or Vespucciens. Doesn't matter here. Wiggins Vespuccian.
Roy is here. I have a big question for you, and I need you to solve it like that.
Easy.
Homelessness.
Done.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Dang, that was so easy. I haven't gotten to see the evidence yet, but I'll trust you.
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot of numbers and data and just fixed.
Great job. Fixed.
Yeah.
So you're out in Highland, Illinois. You've got a cool business called Tulligan's right there on the square. It's an Irish pub. And I have eaten your wares. Can I say that? No? What do I say to sound
right.
Dignified?
Sampled your menu.
Okay.
I mean, it's good, not as fancy.
Good enough. I've sampled your menu many times.
Yeah.
Really enjoy it. Lots and lots of great drinks. Atmosphere to boot. There's your commercial. But has Highland is a little bit of an island. Mm-hmm. No rhyme intended. But have you guys seen homelessness on the rise there at all, or is it kind of exist too far away?
I'm sure it exists everywhere, but it's not prevalent.
Because where I live in the Metro East,
mm-hmm.
which is the corridor of Edwardsville, Collinsville, O'Fallon, and everybody I know is basically within that corridor. And I apologize if you, there's lots of people that live in the Metro East outside of that corridor, mm-hmm. but that's just where we go, you know, for practices and school and stuff and mm-hmm. whatever. There are so many more homeless people in those cities than I have ever seen in my lifetime, and I have lived there my whole life. There is now a woman in Collinsville who runs up and down Main Street just flashing, lifting her shirt and flashing people. She'll squat down and she'll pee right in front of you, and you're like, I have to deal with this, not as a person who just has to deal with a crazy person, but now my kids mm-hmm. are in the car, and my 10-year-old son's going, whoa, and not that he's actually seen that, but many people have,
mm-hmm.
and we're having to deal with this stuff, and we always are like, oh, it's so unfortunate for the homeless person. I mean, it's unfortunate for everybody. It's not just unfortunate for, it's not just like, oh, let's have compassion for these people. Let's have compassion for everybody else. The city council has to deal with this now. Everybody has to deal with this, and it's so much worse than it used to be within our lifetimes. So that's the question I really have for you. Why is it so much worse, Roy?
Well, the obvious answer is economics. It's always a leading thing. But in all seriousness, in a much younger phase of my life, I lived in Colorado, and I actually worked at a homeless shelter.
Yep.
And it was interesting that a lot of the people I worked with were very liberal, all Democrats, and
who were volunteering there.
Volunteering.
Yeah.
So they were doing good work.
Yeah.
Good people. But their approach to what the cause of homelessness was always somebody else's fault. And not to blame the people who are homeless, but they would not spend the time talking about mental illness, addiction, all of these other factors that are really the culprits. You don't have just average everyday schmoes like in the Depression era, where people were functioning normally and being productive members of society, and now they have no money and they're homeless.
Right.
That's not the case. The vast majority, in my experience, was these are people who are either illegal immigrants, or they're mentally ill, or they have an addiction problem, or multiples of those. And addressing those things would be the key to making progress. Now, you add on to those things that are already existing, will always exist. There'll always be mental illness and addiction and mm-hmm. all of that. You add on to that the economic woes of what we're living through now, and it exacerbates, and it always does. Every time we go through
recession
or high inflation or whatever, it expands. But even a lot of that, I think, is because there are people who were functional addicts or even functionally mentally ill. Now they can't afford their medicine. And when you're dealing with schizophrenia and things like that, if you're not taking your medicine, you nosedive quick.
Yeah.
And so it looks like a bigger problem, in part because of economic things. But the biggest issue for me always was, and a frustration for me, was that the people who were doing the good work and helping these people were just putting on Band-Aids, blaming somebody else, and not getting to the root issues.
Well, who were they blaming? Because we're talking about big social problems.
Well, at the time, obviously, at the time, it was Newt Gingrich.
They just blame Newt Gingrich?
Exactly. He was Speaker of the House, and everything was blamed on him.
What?
Yeah, it was insane. Everything was his problem. I don't know if you were old enough to remember, but
I was probably about 14 or 15.
He's pushing old people off a cliff in a wheelchair. He wants to kill sick people and old people. And I mean, it was
he wasn't even the president at the time.
No,
it
no.
was Newt Gingrich's fault?
Everything was Newt Gingrich's fault in that time period. And he actually came into Denver on a book tour. that was one of his history books that he wrote. Wasn't even about politics. And they organized, some of the people I worked with helped organize this mass protest of him selling his book. And I actually said to them, I said, well, what are you hoping to accomplish? You think he's going to, you're disrupting his non-political event. You think that's going to make him more open to hearing your concerns about why he's destroying everything? It just, it's so counterproductive, that whole mentality of, and we see it today with the college kids
even
protesting.
More, yeah.
It just, there's no logic or reason to any of it, but it was interesting that, and I think there's still, I still have a couple of my siblings are social workers and they're in the industry too, and they tend to lean more left, and it's always about who do we blame and not about how do we fix. And I would just like to see more of that,
you know,
addressing
past,
this problem.
I asked you the question not knowing. I remember you said that you worked at the homeless facility for a while in Colorado, but I did not remember that when I asked you this question. Hmm. And so it's interesting to hear that story. But I think some of the social ills that you've addressed actually are the root causes. I mean, you can always go deeper and deeper and deeper, but they are a possible root cause. Hmm. I mean, you mentioned mental illness is a main one, and it always has been.
Yeah.
And you mentioned economics. That's a great example because the people at the bottom always get hit the hardest, and these are the people at the absolute bottom.
Right.
And so, of course, there's going to be more of them struggling to just have the basic needs. That because in America, we're rich enough that if you have nothing, you can just get free money.
Right.
I mean, you really can. You can go get a SNAP card and get free groceries, but you got to sign up for it. And if you're mentally ill, like to the point of really, really far gone or an addict, you're not even going to be able to do that. You can't even go really sign up for something. And so you're talking about not just people at the bottom of the socioeconomic sphincter. But you're talking about the people even below that. And so, yes, of course, there are more of them. And I think that you have kind of diagnosed that problem in a way that I hadn't thought about. Because I'm thinking, and I still think this is true, that all issues that lead to more and more homelessness, unfortunately, many of them are politically driven right now. Because at all times, some of them are not. Mental illness is not a political issue.
Right.
But crime is, and illegal immigration is, and economics are, and all of those things have been caused and exacerbated and made worse by who? I don't think I need to answer that question because you're tuned into 97.1. You already know where I'm going with this.
Well, there's one thing if I could add to that. If a while back, there was a celebrity, I forget who it was on the Tonight Show, and they were saying, it was after Clinton got elected. Oh, well, now we got a Democrat in office. And he's a big social guy. He talks about causes all the time. I forget who it was. Oh, now we got Clinton in office. It's going to be great for all of your organizations that you spokesman for. And it was a very liberal actor. And he said, it's actually the opposite. Because people stop giving when there's Democrats in office. So all of the nonprofit organizations, the church organizations, take a huge hit when Democrats get in office. One, because their taxes go up, so their giving goes down. And two, there's this mindset, oh, the Democrats are in, they'll take care of them now.
Mm.
And so there is a political aspect to it that's not, you know, economic policy, but it is this the mindset of, well, you're going to raise my taxes, I can't give as much to charity.
Mm-hmm.
Or you take away my tax incentives to give to charity, I'm not going to give to charity. And then there's the less overt mentality that I don't know if this exists as much anymore, but back then it did, that, oh, well, you know, Clinton will take care of him now.
You know, as we close this segment out, I will just say this and just something to think about, because I think this is a big issue that is affecting people. Like, we talk about illegal immigration, And some of that actually is affecting people personally now in ways that never, that issue has always kind of been out there somewhere, but it is kind of here now. But that's one that really is touching people, is the homelessness thing, which is not just illegal immigration, but is also is part of that whole discussion. Do you think it's going to be better after 4 years of Kamala Harris? Or do you think it's going to be way worse? And I'll ask the same question about Donald Trump. Do you think that issue will be better after Donald Trump, or do you think it'll be way worse? I don't know whether Donald Trump will solve that issue entirely. I do know that if you are concerned about the rise of homelessness in your town, as you're listening to me talk right now, do you think that Kamala Harris is going to fix that problem? Donald Trump may not fix it, but it won't get worse, I don't think. That Kamala Harris, that problem will get way worse. Yeah. If you've added 10 million people to the streets of the United States from south of the border, mostly, where do you think those people go? And what about if you add 20 million? Because they're not going to change their policies on the border.
Welcome to Paradise. Wiggins America.
From the hands it came down, from the side it came down, from the feet it came down and ran to the ground.
Wiggins America.
Between heaven and hell, a teardrop fell in the deep crimson dew. The tree of life grew, and the blood gave life to the branches of the tree, and the blood was the price that set the captives free.
I was just talking in the break with Old Roy, and you started telling a story about Ireland. Is it related to homelessness?
It is.
Please tell. I said, hang on, tell it on the air.
Well, it's related to immigration, but inevitably that will create other problems. So the Irish government right now is all in on the open immigration stuff. And they sold it to some of these smaller towns in Ireland, is that we're taking Ukrainian refugees. They all buy into the Ukraine's a you know, an honorable thing to, you know, to be against Russia. So there's these refugees from Ukraine. They're going to come in and we're going to place them around. Well, that was the bait and switch, was that this one particular town, I believe Limerick in Ireland, population 200 people, just got 250 African refugees dropped on them.
So a town of 200 just over doubled in size with refugees?
Doubled in size with African refugees who are almost exclusively male, military age. And what do you do? There's no infrastructure. Most of these towns in Ireland don't have any industry other than tourism, and people come to the Irish towns for that Irish cultural experience.
Yeah.
And you've now added twice as, or
the culture of the town completely changes,
is gone. And so the only industry they have in a lot of these towns is tourism. And when you erase the entire Irish population by more than doubling it with someone who's not Irish or has no connection, on this bait and switch that, oh, we're just helping the Ukraine war. It's, what are all those people going to do that are now suddenly in a town that only has the infrastructure for 200 people and now there's 450? Are you just creating a homelessness problem?
Is Ireland... You're so connected to Ireland because of your roots, and you have an Irish pub in Highland and all that we'll talk about. But is the Irish population realizing this, or is it kind kind of like here, like in Illinois, for instance, where, yeah, a lot of us downstate, we don't like the way Illinois is run, but all that matters is Cook County. Is it the same in Ireland where, yeah, Limerick doesn't like this, but Dublin doesn't care?
No, it's different in Ireland, in my experience, because a lot of people, the Irish people are a lot closer to their civil war than we are. So it was the early 1900s. So there's still a lot of relating to people who are oppressed or downtrodden or, you know, colonized. So there's sort of an ingrained sympathy for other people around the world who suffer. There's also, it's also very Catholic country, and so there's an inherent
There's like empathy built into the culture.
And it's funny, even my cousins over there, who they're always huge fans of American Democrat politicians or presidents specifically, and I think it goes back to Kennedy because every house has a picture of Kennedy in them still. But when they talk about everything they're against with people living off of the government dole, everything they say policy-wise, they're much more, from an American perspective, conservative. But they somehow, and for some reason, have this affinity for Democrat politicians. So I think they're looking at a 1980s idea of what a Republican is, some fat white guy with a cigar with all the money. But their policies...
That was the whole DNC.
Right.
Until J.B. Pritzker got up and he actually is that guy.
So I think they're open to a lot of social programs on the surface out of empathy and out of a camaraderie with somebody who's been oppressed. But at the end of the day, they're living in an economy and an environment that's enticing all of these people to come there and live off the government. And so they're, when you talk to them about it, they're a lot more conservative than
they think they are.
Than they think they are.
Interesting. Now, here, last question for you. Does everything in Ireland change now? Are they going to remove their pictures of JFK, the good Catholic, and put pictures up of RFK, and now they're Trump supporters? Am I wrong?
And a small inner voice said, you do have a choice. The vine engrafted me, and I clung to the tree.
Wiggins, America.
And the blood gave life to the branches of the tree, and the blood was the price that set the captives free. And with the numbers that came through the fire and the flood, I clung to the tree and was redeemed by the blood. From his hands it came down, from his side it came down, from the feet it came down and ran to the ground.
This is Wiggins America.
Man, disco is so dumb. Disco is bad. It's just bad. There was a joke, like a sitcom-y type joke in the late 80s, early 90s when I was a kid watching TV that I remember that it was like a standard go-to to bash disco. And then like the dad of the family go, oh, I don't want to get rid of my old disco clothes, though. It might come back. It was like, I don't know why that joke was so common for like 3 or 4 years, but it was. But going back now as an adult and listening to disco, they're right. It was awful. It was so
it was so gross. Like all the Studio 54, it was over sexual. Think about it though. Think about this. Even if you were, I was not alive during disco, or maybe I was born during the tail end of it in the early 80s. But think about how many good disco songs there are. And let's say it lasted 4 years, 1978 to 1982 or something like that. Think about how many good disco songs are still around. You got maybe a couple from the Bee Gees. You got Funky Town. I'm forgetting one other one. Heart of Glass, probably. But that's about it. And look, if there are others that I'm forgetting, like, oh, no, but this is a really good disco. This one lasted. Let me know at Radio Wiggins. Or you can do the voicemail thing that we have now. If you're listening on the app on Odyssey, click the microphone and leave a voice message about this ridiculous topic if you want to. But I'm already pretty much decided. You can try to change my mind, but I have decided now. Stamp it. Put it in the history books. Disco sucked. Yeah, disco really did suck. It was just, again, it was just gross and stupid. Speaking of things that are cringy and kind of stupid.
You have been vice president for 3.5 years.
Yeah.
The steps that you're talking about now, why haven't you done them already?
Well, first of all, we had to recover as an economy, and we have done that. I'm very proud of the work that we have done that has brought inflation down to less than 3%. The work that we have done to cap the cost of insulin at $35 a month for seniors. Donald Trump said he was going to do a number of things, including allowing Medicare to negotiate drug prices. Never happened. We did it. So now, as I travel in the state of Georgia and around our country, the number of seniors that have benefited, I was in Nevada recently, a grandmother who showed me her receipts. And before we capped the cost of insulin for seniors at $35 a month, she was paying hundreds of dollars up to thousands of dollars a month for her insulin. She's not doing that anymore.
You maintain Bidenomics is a success.
I maintain that when we do the work of bringing down prescription medication for the American people, including capping the cost of the annual cost of prescription medication for seniors at $2,000.
I know that I'm supposed to use the material from the Kamala Harris interview and come on and talk about how dumb it is. I mean, I just played a whole clip that's like a minute long of her response to how have you helped the economy? Well, I've capped the price of insulin, which she didn't even do. Trump did that. But either way, if you're like, no, he didn't, whatever, I don't care. If your answer to the economy is that we tried to cap prescription prices and that's it, I mean, that's all she said, then what is the good of even playing this? I mean, I get it. We talk politics, and this is the first interview from the Democrat candidate in almost 40 days, and she may not do another one. That may be it. But really, what is playing any of this add to the conversation? What does it add to your...
Hey, it's Jill Schlesinger, CBS News business analyst and certified financial planner. You may have heard me dispensing financial advice on the radio before, but did you know you can get my money tips on demand with my podcast, Money Watch with Jill Schlesinger? If you have a question about a major financial decision in your life, this is the show for you. Follow and listen to Money Watch with Jill Schlesinger on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Where do you think those people go? And what about if you add 20 million? Because they're not going to change their policies.
Paradise, Wiggins America.
From the hands it came down, from the side it came down. From the feet it came down and ran to the ground.
Wiggins America.
Between heaven and hell, a teardrop fell in the deep crimson dew. The tree of life grew. And the blood gave life to the branches of the tree, and the blood was the price that set the captives free.
I was just talking in the break with Old Roy, and you started telling a story about Ireland. Is it related to homelessness?
It is.
Please tell. I said, hang on, tell it on the air.
Well, it's related to immigration, but inevitably that will create other problems. So the Irish government right now is all in on the open immigration stuff. And they sold it to some of these smaller towns in Ireland. Is that we're taking Ukrainian refugees. They all buy into the Ukraine's an honorable thing to be against Russia. So there's these refugees from Ukraine. They're going to come in and we're going to place them around. Well, that was the bait and switch, was that this one particular town, I believe Limerick in Ireland, population 200 people, just got 250 African refugees dropped on them.
So a town of 200 just over doubled in size with refugees?
Doubled in size with African refugees who are almost exclusively male, military age. And what do you do? There's no infrastructure. Most of these towns in Ireland don't have any industry other than tourism. And people come to the Irish towns for that Irish cultural experience.
Yeah.
And you've now added twice as... or
the culture of the town completely changes.
Is gone. And so the only industry they have in a lot of these towns is tourism. And when you erase the entire Irish population by more than doubling it with someone who's not Irish or has no connection... on this bait and switch that, oh, we're just helping the Ukraine war. It's, what are all those people going to do that are now suddenly in a town that only has the infrastructure for 200 people and now there's 450? Are you just creating a homelessness problem?
Is Ireland, you're so connected to Ireland because of your roots and you have an Irish pub in Highland and all that we'll talk about, but... Is the Irish population realizing this, or is it kind of like here, like in Illinois, for instance, where, yeah, a lot of us downstate, we don't like the way Illinois is run, but all that matters is Cook County. Is it the same in Ireland where, yeah, Limerick doesn't like this, but Dublin doesn't care?
No, it's different in Ireland, in my experience, because a lot of people, the Irish people are a lot closer to their civil war.
Okay.
Than we are. So it was the early 1900s. So there's still a lot of relating to people who are oppressed or downtrodden or, colonized. So there's sort of an ingrained sympathy for other people around the world who suffer. It's also a very Catholic country, and so there's an inherent
there's like empathy built into the culture.
And it's funny, even my cousins over there, who they're always huge fans of American Democrat politicians or presidents specifically, and I think it goes back to Kennedy because every house has a picture of Kennedy in them still. But when they talk about everything they're against with people living off of the government dole, everything they say policy-wise, they're much more, from an American perspective, conservative. But they somehow, and for some reason, have this affinity for Democrat politicians. So I think they're looking at a 1980s idea of what a Republican is, some fat white guy with a cigar with all the money. But their policies...
That was the whole DNC.
Right.
And so J.B. Pritzker got up and he actually is that guy.
So I think they're open to a lot of social programs on the surface out of empathy and out of a camaraderie with somebody who's been oppressed. But at the end of the day, they're living in an economy and an environment that's enticing all of these people to come there and live off the government. And so they're, when you talk to them about it, they're a lot more conservative than
they think they are. Interesting. Now, here, last question for you. Does everything in Ireland change now? Are they going to remove their pictures of JFK, the good Catholic, and put pictures up of RFK, and now they're Trump supporters? Am I wrong?
And a small inner voice said, you do have a choice. The vine engrafted me, and I clung to the tree.
Wiggins, America.
And the blood gave life to the branches of the tree. And the blood was a price that set the captives free. And with the numbers that came through the fire and the flood, I clung to the tree and was redeemed by the blood. From his hands it came down, from his side it came down, from the feet it came down and ran to the ground.
Come on,
Wiggins America.
Man, disco is so dumb. Disco is bad. It's just bad. There was a joke, like a sitcom-y type joke in the late 80s, early 90s when I was a kid watching TV that I remember that it was like a standard go-to to bash disco. And then, like, the dad of the family go, oh, I don't want to get rid of my old disco clothes, though. It might come back. It was like, I don't know why that joke was so common for, like, 3 or 4 years, but it was. But going back now as an adult and listening to disco, they're right. It was awful. It was so gross. Like, all the Studio 54, it was over-sexual. Think about it, though. Think about this. Even if you were... I was not alive during disco, or maybe I was born during the tail end of it in the early 80s. But think about how many good disco songs there are. And let's say it lasted 4 years, 1978 to 1982 or something like that. Think about how many good disco songs are still around. You got maybe a couple from the Bee Gees. You got Funky Town. I'm forgetting one other one. Heart of Glass, probably. But that's about it. And look, if there are others that I'm forgetting, like, oh, no, but this is a really good disco. This one lasted. Let me know at Radio Wiggins. Or you can do the voicemail thing that we have now. If you're listening on the app on Odyssey, click the microphone and leave a voice message about this ridiculous topic if you want to. But I'm already pretty much decided. You can try to change my mind, but I have decided now, stamp it, put it in the history books. Disco sucked. Yeah, disco really did suck. It was just, again, it was just gross and stupid. Speaking of things that are cringy and kind of stupid.
You have been vice president for 3.5 years.
Yeah.
The steps that you're talking about now, why haven't you done them already?
Well, first of all, we had to recover as an economy, and we have done that. I'm very proud of the work that we have done that has brought inflation down to less than 3%. The work that we have done to cap the cost of insulin at $35 a month for seniors. Donald Trump said he was going to do a number of things, including allowing Medicare to negotiate drug prices. Never happened. We did it. So now, as I travel in the state of Georgia and around our country, the number of seniors that have benefited, I was in Nevada recently, a grandmother who showed me her receipts. And before we capped the cost of insulin for seniors at $35 a month, she was paying hundreds of dollars, up to thousands of dollars a month for her insulin. She's not doing that anymore.
You maintain Bidenomics.
is a success. I maintain that when we do the work of bringing down prescription medication for the American people, including capping the cost of the annual cost of prescription medication for seniors at $2,000.
I know that I'm supposed to use the material from the Kamala Harris interview and come on and talk about how dumb it is. I mean, I just played a whole clip that's like a minute long of her response to how have you helped the economy. Well, I've capped the price of insulin, which she didn't even do. Trump did that. But either way, if you're like, no, he didn't, whatever, I don't care. If your answer to the economy is that we tried to cap prescription prices, and that's it, I mean, that's all she said, then what is the good of even playing this? I mean, I get it. We talk politics, and this is the first interview from the Democrat candidate in almost 40 days, and she may not do another one. That may be it. But really, what does this what is playing any of this add to the conversation? What does it add to your knowledge? What does it add to your life? It's nothing. As Annie said earlier this week, I thought it was really good. She's an NPC. If you're not familiar with computer talk, NPC is non-playable character in a video game. It's just like a program that runs that your character, who you're a live person, can go interact with, but they say the same kind of couple lines, and then they just move along. They're just sort of a space filler. We don't currently have a president. So if you're thinking that this is good, then yeah, you should vote for Kamala Harris, because you're not really voting for a president. You're voting for the Washington machine to just kind of keep churning the way that it is, because there's no real person running anything right now. And she would be the same. She can't do interviews. She can't do anything. So I'm not sure that I want to keep playing clips from that interview, because when a person doesn't stand for anything, like, she doesn't even know why she believes what she believes. She just believes whatever is in the moment that allows her to progress in her career. The only thing that she would do as president is come out and probably push social things. You know, she would push racial division more. She would push wilder sexual things into the mainstream. She would push pretty much the same stuff that you already know. She would come out and do that stuff, because that's really all she is and all these kind of NPC players are. They don't really know how to govern anything, and they don't need to. You have the whole Washington bureaucracy, the deep state, the whatever you want to call it, all the agencies and everything. They just run you, and then you show up almost like a vice president does, where they don't really do anything. They just show up at events and they kind of smile and wave. Well, That's what a president Kamala Harris would look like. I don't really need to make this case, though. I think we've tread this territory. It was just a little bit of a surprise watching the only interview that she's done with friendly fire, CNN, and her vice president also there to shield her from the questions. She's sitting at a table. You know, it's supposed to be very conversational. If you look, that's most of the interviews she does. Any of the ones that she has not done like that, like with Lester Holt, or regular, like, person sitting in chairs interviews, she's done very, very poorly at. The ones where she is scheduled the most of are panels. So she tried to make that interview into a panel and tried to come off as conversational, but she's just not very good at doing it. And so this is what we get. I mean, this is where we are. And I guess we got to live with it. It's such a short time that she might be able to pull it off. If she had to go through the whole process, she wouldn't have gotten here. She never got a single delegate. There were three other candidates: Dean Phillips, uncommitted, and a third guy who all got more delegates than Kamala Harris did throughout the process. But all that doesn't matter. What you need to remember is disco sucked, and it was gross. Until next week. Oh, come on, give it to me, yeah. Ooh, come on, hold me close, feel me, touch me.
everything. Unless a branch of the government says it, then it's probably fine. Wiggins America.
Hey, it's Jill Schlesinger, CBS News business analyst and certified financial planner. You may have heard me dispensing financial advice on the radio before, but did you know you can get my money tips on demand with my podcast, Money Watch with Jill Schlesinger? If you have a question about a major financial decision in your life, this is the show for you. Follow and listen to Money Watch with Jill Schlesinger on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.